tonight, our Chief Geek Officer Elliot Serrano rides sidecar. Then later, we'll check in with friend of the show Heather Lally. All that, and I'm being told there are several types of pie in the studio right now on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez.
It is Friday night, and we are in the Allstate Showcase studio. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. We are usually on the first floor in the Allstate Showcase studio, but tonight they are decorating for the holidays. Elliot, is it weird to be upstairs in the 7th? We're in Nick D's studio.
Ooh, this is Nick D's studio.
This is not Studio A. This is what I call... I'm sure there are other people that broadcast from here and do things, but I this is Nick D's studio, so I don't touch too much.
I won't. Actually, am I wrong? I think this was the old studios that they had when the game was here.
That is correct.
Right?
Yes.
So Carm and Connor McKnight and all those guys. The great, I remember that because there's a bathroom right there, like right off to the side.
That is something people are drawn to immediately when they're in the studio. You realize you can just go right there to that bathroom. Right.
Well, I wouldn't because
it's weird to be right on the other side of the door.
Is it a soundproof bathroom?
I haven't tested that out, but if you would like me to.
Well, I could go in there and start
just screaming.
And see if you hear me.
If you do, please step down. There's a little step
there.
There's
a step, yes.
People have fallen repeatedly.
Yeah.
In and out. Heather Lally is joining us. I think we should just start with pie. Nothing makes me happier than a good slice of pie. And actually, nothing makes me angrier than a bad slice of pie. Don't you think that's
That is true. That's
right?
Very true.
Your mood can be set by the type of pie that you have.
I think so.
Now you are putting together, you have a piece coming out in the Chicago Tribune.
That's correct.
About pumpkin pies, but not the, because as much as I love pumpkin pie, it really is the kind of thing I only want once a year because it's a weird texture.
It is kind of an odd texture, and it's so like seasonal. You so associate it with this time of year, but I can see that. But so the editor presented me with this topic of like riffs on classic pumpkin pie.
Right.
So... since it's been kind of a weird year, Cubs won, we had this election maybe, been a little bit of a strange 2016.
Get in the kitchen and bake.
Exactly.
Right?
Bake and do some kind of different takes on a classic.
Do you not want to do a different take on a classic, Elliot? You're squinching.
Oh, no. I'm sorry, you said that pie makes you angry.
Bad pie makes me angry.
Bad pie makes you angry.
Great pie makes me happy.
I was going to say, does pie make you irrational? that's a math nerd.
Oh,
joke.
Got that one.
I don't know where the sound machine is up here. I'll have to find it. I think I can do that from here. So what are some of the improvising?
Yeah,
with pumpkin pie?
The paper sent me a big giant mountain of pie cookbooks, which was outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
I tested a whole wide range. My kids really liked an ice cream pie that was like so...
Wait, pumpkin ice cream pie?
Simple, oh. Yes. You just take like a tub of vanilla ice cream and mix it with like a can of pumpkin and like pumpkin pie spices and shove it in a graham cracker crust and freeze it. Super good.
Anytime you're shoving anything in a graham cracker crust, things
like
have gone
one.
Well. Yes, Elliot.
Okay, Heather, this is a question that has been nagging me for a long time. And
yes.
Since you're a pie expert,
okay.
I'm asking you. Is cheesecake a cake, or is it actually a pie? Because many cheesecakes are it's cheese in a graham cracker crust.
Ooh.
True. It's definitely not a cake. I can answer that with certainty.
Yeah, why do they call it cheesecake?
It's more of a baked custard.
Yes.
Which is basically exactly what pumpkin pie is.
But no one would buy it if they called it custard. It would be much harder for the Cheesecake
cheese
Factory
custard
to have
doesn't
it.
Sound
the
as
custard factory.
The custard factory? Yeah, it doesn't work.
Yeah, it doesn't sound as
cheesecake.
Good.
Kind of like a jellyfish really isn't a fish.
Exactly.
Talk amongst yourselves.
And by the way, cheesecake is another example. The texture. I don't know what it is about pumpkin
don't
pie.
Love it.
And I don't love
so
the,
one
but
of the
ice cream pumpkin.
The ice cream was outstanding. We all liked that, and it was so easy. I would totally make that again.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are put off by the custard, I also tried a... like a honey date pumpkin pie that had little chunks of dates folded into the pumpkin stuff and then had a marshmallow topping like on top like you'd do with like a sweet potato thing. I liked that because it kind of broke up that. It had a different
texture.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's almost, I can't, it's not that it's squishy or.
It's a little
squishy. So I think if you get, maybe the fig gives it grit. That's
a
way you want grit, you want grit in your pie.
Little bridges in there.
Little fig grit. I don't know where I'm going with that. I am so happy about pie right now. What were you going to say, Elliot?
No, I'm just, again, pie. Wait, so this pie that you're describing,
Yes.
The pumpkin with the honey.
And the dates.
Dates.
Yes.
Sounds like a wonderful pie. Sounds like a pie I would love. Is this pie single?
Well, you know, you'll have to talk to the pie nicely.
Mm-hmm. And compliment.
Swipe properly. Compliment the pie. Mm-hmm.
The pie is going to tell me things are complicated for it, isn't
it? I think it is kind of a complicated pie, actually. It is kind of complicated. It needs to, it has sort of a fussy serving thing because you want the marshmallows to still be warm when you serve it.
No, the marshmallows, is it the same way you put marshmallows, like the mini marshmallows on a sweet potato cake?
Exactly that way.
Oh, yes. Sorry. And then they get like the toasted top. It's a little crunchy, but then gooey.
Exactly.
See? I know. Somewhere I turned into like that SNL bit.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Tell me about more about the muffins. This week has been long and strenuous, exhausting mentally, and I think looking forward to pie is the way to go.
There you go.
So far we've covered we're talking about the variations of pumpkin pie. This is the season for it. And I say start experimenting now. Why wait until Thanksgiving?
Exactly.
Try one out. See what.
Do one a week.
One a week until you know which one you want to serve your family for Thanksgiving.
True.
Right? Because a lot of people, I think this is going to be the year that I think a lot of people are going to sort of want to be around each other.
Yes. And maybe overload on the comfort.
Comfort food.
Yeah.
I ate so much macaroni and cheese when Knife and Time was here on Tuesday. It was all Knife and Time mac and cheese and rum was pretty much all I remember about Tuesday night. So we have the pumpkin ice cream pie.
Yes.
And that's that one's in the graham cracker crust?
That's in the graham cracker mm-hmm. crust. One of my very favorites was just a regular pumpkin pie, except you add a tiny bit of like chipotle pepper spice.
Wait.
Mm-hmm. Just a bit. Mm-hmm. It was so good. Like it wasn't hot. It was just kind of like pleasantly warm. Was great.
A little kick?
A little kick.
And that makes sense because in Mexican food, you know, a lot of times we use squash and spices, things that you don't think of. We use sweet and hot.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes sense to me. So that's by the way, we're talking to Heather Lally, whose piece on pumpkin pies comes out in a few days mm-hmm. in the Chicago Tribune. And 312-981-7200, tell us about what kind of, have you tried a different kind of pumpkin pie that we haven't mentioned yet? And we'll hear more about what she has coming up in this piece in just a moment on 720 WGN. You're listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue. It is Friday night, and I have, you know what I saw on Facebook? This is this really put the F in TGIF, all TGIFs. I really needed this Friday to happen. Am I the only one? That's why I wanted to start with pie, Heather. Heather Lally joins us in studio. She is a writer who has contributed many pieces to the Chicago Tribune. We've had her on before talking about picnics and making your kids school lunches. We've talked about crock potting, a lot of your food that you didn't think you could. And tonight we are talking about the different ways to make pumpkin pie. We are saying that cheesecake is not cake, but is more like pie. But Gunther says something that I think we need to know. What do you think, Gunther?
Yeah, I would like to make a correction here.
Will you do me a favor first? Would you turn your radio down? Because I can hear myself behind you.
Okay, just a moment.
No problem. That's okay. I love being corrected. And it happens so often. I don't even, it's natural. I'm like, yes. See, I can still hear myself. There it is. Thank you, Gunther. Appreciate that. Okay.
Here we go.
Hi, Gunther. Okay, so you are Gunther the Cook. Is that your title?
No, I'm a gardener. I'm a professional gardener.
Oh, okay.
But I do a lot of cooking.
Excellent. We're...
And then back home in the old country in Germany, you make a yeast dough and put some cheese on top or in the middle and another little yeast dough on top, and then you put some raisins in, and then you have a dough, and you have a cake. And that's the cake in Europe.
That sounds wonderful.
In America, everything is pie, but there is a cake of cheese.
I think a cake of cheese. And how do you say it in German?
Käsekuchen.
Hold on a second, let me try it. Käsekuchen.
No.
Oh.
Käse.
Käse.
Kuchen.
Kuchen.
Käse is cheese.
Käse.
And Kuchen is cake.
Kuchen.
No, Kuchen.
Kuchen. I hope you have something to wipe your phone down with.
Yes. It doesn't matter. It's just me. I'm the phone, so it's okay.
That's fair.
But anyhow, when you make a cheesecake and you make it from yeast dough, it tastes better than from just a pie.
That sounds.
It makes you fuller. You know, you don't need that much, and you don't get so sick. Like a lot of children get sick when they eat cheesecake.
Gunther, Elliot has a question for you.
Gunther,
go ahead.
So here's my question: is Do you have any of this cake on hand? And can you bring it to the studio?
If you're going to send me a helicopter, then I come.
Where are you calling from, Gunther?
Harvard.
Oh, from Harvard, Illinois. It's a lovely evening. It's starting to feel autumnal, isn't it?
By the way, we got 14 degrees right now here in Harvard. It's the coldest night this year.
Is it 14?
14 degrees, yes.
Okay.
And actually, you'll be way too high in Chicago. You are in 24. You have frost tonight, too.
And that's not going to be good for the garden. Do you have
I'm
anything?
I'm also a weatherman, see?
Yes. Well, yes. Are you a weatherman or a weather reporter?
I'd be bored of everything.
I like that. How was your garden this year? How did the weather affect it?
I'm 83 years old. I cannot do a garden anymore, but I have some nice big pots, and I put some tomatoes in the pots, and I have more tomatoes than I had in my garden.
Oh, wonderful.
And well, there again, you have to have the right variety. If you don't buy the right variety if you don't know the right variety, then you end up with nothing or, you know, half and half.
Fair.
I suggest if people go and grow them in the pots, tell them to buy Super Fantastic or Fantastic or the Jet Star or Sincerity. They're all good varieties, but Big Boy is actually a watery tomato and it's not good for eating.
Okay, not the Big Boy, but Fantastic or Super Fantastic.
Yeah, and if you want Big Boy, you buy Better Boy.
Better Boy. Don't go for
Better Boy. But if you want just go one or two pots of tomatoes, buy Fantastic Supersonic
Gunther,
if you can get it. Okay?
Gunther, you have to call me in the spring because I'm not going to remember this. You have a lovely evening, my friend.
Can I come down and give you a lesson down there?
Oh, that would be a great idea. I think I need lessons in all kinds of things. Thank you, Gunther. Have a great night. Lovely to hear from you. Thank you. And you had a lovely garden, actually. How were your tomatoes?
You know, they were not so hot this year, and I don't know what I did. I know literally nothing about gardening. I need Gunther as well.
Well, don't forget, Super Fantastic, Fantastic.
Yeah, I think I had some big boys.
You might have had big boys. That's what he called them, Elliot. Don't
That's
make
what
the laughing.
The variety is
there
called.
There were so many jokes I could have made along there. I just let them go by.
That's all right. I got your pots right here. And we are talking about pies as well. Gunther wanted to call and correct us about there are cheesecakes, but not the typical, traditional ones that we know of here. Cake of cheese.
A cake of cheese.
Yes.
He was talking about a cake that had cheese in it. Mm-hmm. But a cheesecake is pretty much all cheese that's been, you know.
It's a custard.
Yeah, like a custard.
Yeah.
Cheesy. Mm-hmm. You ever have flan?
Wait, is there actually? Flan is custard with no cheese.
Yeah, but flan you can actually make with cream cheese. And it's actually pretty good.
Now I'm so hungry. Okay, I'm going to take care of that. So we have, so far we have pumpkin ice cream pie.
Yes.
Honey fig pie with marshmallow on top. And what kind of crust is that in?
That one, I made so many. I think that was in a standard like flaky pie crust.
Cool. And then the Chipotle one with pumpkin, little kick.
Yes, that was really good. And that was in a gingerbread crust.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
Okay, so we got three. How many more did you make? How many? What is it?
I made six.
Okay, so what are a couple of the other ones?
It was the same recipe. This Mark Bittman, do you know? He's a cookbook author. He's written a ton of different books, but he has a new baking book out that's great. I highly recommend it on your holiday list for bakers.
Okay.
So he had a bunch of pumpkin pie recipes that were cool because it was just one standard recipe that you would mix different things into. So he had the Chipotle one. He also had a chocolate one.
I was going to ask, are there any chocolate ones?
Yes. So you just reserve a little bit of the pumpkin pie batter.
Mm-hmm.
You mix it with some melted chocolate, and then you like swirl it into the pie. It was great.
That sounds awesome.
That was really good. I think that was my daughter's
favorite. For all these pies, you've mentioned the graham cracker one and the gingerbread. So how hard is it to make a pie crust? Because that's the daunting part, I think, for a lot of people. Like
it
pouring
is.
It into the shell. Like
sure.
That's...
First rule is there is absolutely no shame in using a store-bought crust.
Okay.
They are fine.
Done. Click.
They are good.
Mm-hmm.
I worked for a year at Hoosier Mama Pie Company here in Chicago, which I highly recommend. Wonderful pie. And my main job was making their pie crusts, like in big commercial mixers. And I got pretty good at it because I was making like 60 pounds of pie dough every day. When I have to at home just make like one pie shell,
right. It
sometimes doesn't turn out as well. It's a little finicky. But
yeah, that's the thing is, especially if it's the kind you have to roll out, and
yes.
then it's like it's too thin at one place, and then you try to fold it back in and start all over again. Now it's all messed up because
practice.
It
just
won't.
If you were making, you know, if you're doing that for 10 hours a day, you'd get pretty good at.
I get better at it.
Yes.
I'm not going to do
and
that.
And the crimping.
I take a sabbatical. I'm sorry, Todd, Stephanie, I have to take a sabbatical. I need to work on some pies. Pie crust sabbatical. We are hanging out with Heather Lally. She's written a piece on pumpkin pies and how you can, you know, spice it up a little bit. Turn it around. Flip it on its head. Well, just, you know, just eat it. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. It is Friday night, and it's a beautiful evening in Chicago. It's downright autumnal, Heather. Wouldn't you say it's become autumn? And also, Heather Lally, who's written a piece for the Chicago Tribune, coming out in just a few days about how you can try different variations on your pumpkin pie. I wanted to talk pumpkin pie to start the show, because we knew we were going to turn our attention to everything that's happened this week. Pie is calming. Mm-hmm. It's delicious. Elliot Serrano, who we haven't talked that much this week, and you and I were at Heather's. Christopher, you said Chris better than
Chris.
You want Chris Kennedy?
Please.
Chris Kennedy joins us in studio. He's an attorney. He is president of your school board in your district?
No, I've avoided that responsibility. I've been on the board for 9 years, and every other year they asked me to do it, and I said no.
Too much. But you've also served as the Autism Society of Illinois Legislative Director, and I invited you down because I want to talk about participating at the local level. We all watched the returns come in on Tuesday in different ways. Elliot and I were at Heather's house for a taco and Skittles party, and we were enjoying ourselves until things went differently, and we were surprised by you look like you're having sort of flashbacks of Tuesday
night.
I was
a little surprised myself. Yeah, I thought if the election went the way it did, everything I've ever known and understood about the world must be wrong.
Why is that? Because I'm having trouble with people who are like, get over it. You know, people have spoken. What did you expect? Why is that? Why is it the world is not the way you thought it was?
Well, for one, there seemed to be almost universal agreement, right? There was one professor in Washington who said Trump would win.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else. And it wasn't even close. So, you know, obviously it says a lot of things about polling, about, you know, how people respond to polls or don't.
Right.
But it also says a lot about, you know, where the electorate turned out to be. And I still remain stunned. I mean, the Chicago Cubs have won the World Series, and Donald Trump is president.
Yes, it's hard because we were in a state of shock. We hadn't really gotten out of the state of shock with the jubilance and excitement of the Chicago Cubs winning the World Series.
Yeah, it's almost like when Orpheus tells you about the Matrix, and the whole world just changes.
Can I have the other pill, please?
Yeah. Give me the steak.
Well, and for people who are relieved that Donald Trump has won. I mean, because they have been emailing and texting the station. They're very angry with the tone that we have had. I can't answer for other hosts. I can only say that we have, you know, done our best to hear both sides of the conversations. We try to make this a place where, you know, everyone can share their ideas. We might argue. We might annoy each other. I don't think it's any secret that I very much did not want Donald Trump to be the president of the United States. And I think not just with Donald Trump as our president, but I think with all of our legislators from Congress to our local state legislators and representatives to your aldermen, I think people need to pay attention to what's going on. Otherwise, we end up every 2 years when it's midterm elections or the presidential election, we're surprised who our choices are.
Yeah. How did these people get there, and why aren't they doing more for me?
Or how do we find the next candidate? Because one of the things someone told me is what works in Donald Trump's advantage is not having a political history. There's no record of anything he's voted on. There's no record of compromise.
Right. There's no record of, you know, promises,
right,
that make any sense, you know, that have any meat around the proposal or substance of any kind. You could tell where I felt about the
election.
Race. But, you know, I have dealt with a lot of Republicans, I mean, over the years, and I don't know many who were supportive of him. Now,
right.
You know, maybe when they get in the booth, you know, that's who they're going to vote for. And as it turned out, I think 90% of Republicans voted for Trump anyway, even though the leaders, you know, were appalled.
Right.
This is the refrain I commonly hear. I mean, a lot of focus was made on the rhetoric during his campaign, how he was, you know, made the comments about immigrants and Mexicans and, of course, the whole bit about the sexual assaults and all. But
and so on.
But let's just I know this is gonna be crazy. Let's just put that aside for the moment. Okay. But when it came to
other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how
yeah,
did you
how
enjoy
was
the play?
Right. How did you enjoy the play? But talking about the actual policy, his economic plan. I mean, did you think that most Republicans disagreed with that? In addition to the other things, like they said, hold on, these numbers that you're throwing out just don't make sense.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's something that I suppose when it comes down to it, they'd rather have somebody who is closer to their views, even though I don't think he articulated the standard Republican talking points about most economic measures. He always was very simplistic in his presentation of any ideas. And, you know, so one thing that really struck me about this is, you know, I grew up in New York. I spent the first half of my life, I'm 48 now, first 23 years or so in New York. Donald Trump was always in the news.
Yeah.
Selling something new, trying to get attention, always seemed to be in on the joke that he was a little bit of a joke.
Right. I mean, the professional wrestling alone, yeah, I think.
Yeah. Right, the Playboy videos, you name it. I mean, he was just out there trying to sell himself and sell anything. But to get back to your point, which is like, how did these people get there? And you know, I think there was a sense among the electorate that they were not involved. They felt disenfranchised.
Yes.
They felt they were not being represented. And I think sometimes that's an overly simple narrative. People feel like that all the time. But one of the reasons is that people don't participate in any meaningful way. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't get involved. They just sit back and yell at the TV.
Well, and that's the thing. And I've asked this over and over again. You know, people are angry at the things around them. What are you doing to make things better your own home, in your personal life, on your block, in your community?
Have you ever met with your state rep, your state mm-hmm. senator, your congressman?
And it can be, and it is not that hard. I mean, maybe if everyone was doing it, it might get harder to make appointments. But there was a meeting about my son's school. Beard Elementary School is a school for children who have autism. And I wanted to learn more about the possibility of maybe expanding the program because they cap it to third grade and they have an amazing program that shouldn't be sort of, you know, dismantled when a child is 8 years old. But so Representative Martwick had a meeting, and that's how I built a relationship with him. I also met Senator Dan Katowski, who is not my senator, but an advocate for individuals with disabilities throughout the state of Illinois. And you did work with the Autism Society of Illinois as a legislative director when Rod Blagojevich was the governor.
Right.
What is that situation like when you're trying to – are you trying to get a number of reps and senators to understand why this piece of legislation is important for families with children with autism?
Yeah, so like you, I've got a triggering event that caused me to get involved. My daughter was diagnosed probably 2002 at a very young age with autism. She also has epilepsy, and both of them very severe. And Dan Katowski has been an awesome advocate for people with epilepsy as well. But one of the first things that I figured out was that if we're dealing with fights with our insurance providers, with our school, with just paying the bills and finding there's no state services, what is everybody else dealing with?
Right.
And, you know, my wife and I are both, lawyers. We can figure things out. And we're still struggling. What else is everybody doing? So I show up at a couple of meetings. And, as you probably know, you show up, you're put in charge.
Right.
Especially when the job doesn't pay.
So, sure. So. Oh, you're here? Well, look at that. Could you grab us some coffee?
So you say legislative director of the Autism Society of Illinois. That sounds really fancy. That was something I just gave myself as a title so someone would return my phone calls.
Oh, so, you be creative.
Yeah, you start calling, on behalf of yourself as a constituent to your legislator, you've got standing.
Once I could make up titles.
Yeah,
go ahead.
There you go. Make up good ones.
Yes, good ones. Director is good. Okay. Not liaison's too soft.
No.
Director.
Director.
Okay.
Well, especially, if you're the only one doing it. Mm-hmm. That being said, it was obvious we needed to get people to contact their own legislators, right? The duty that each of them owes is primarily to their constituents. So constituent service is huge. So you go to them and they want to solve your problem. Now, they may not be able to do it, but they're at
but
least going to be
in
on
their
your
mind.
Team.
Yes.
Right? They're going to be on your side when it comes up later. But you're also going to find, I think, an advocate. So if you, so I would always tell parents, just bring your kid to their district office.
Mm-hmm.
Show them what you're dealing with, because otherwise it's invisible. It's out of sight, out of mind. And they've got a million problems coming at them every 2 seconds.
Right.
So if you're not there in their faces, you know, there's an adage that if you're not at the table, you're on the menu.
Right.
You know, there's nobody paying attention to your issue.
I have to write that down. So. If you're not at the table, you're on the menu.
Oh, I got a bunch of aphorisms for you.
I like that. Because Heather, you're familiar. Heather and Elliot both know Declan pretty well. And I've thought about bringing Declan down to the Capitol and just letting him walk. Right. And like, go ahead and try and say, this is what it's like, because there was another mom named Angie who has an adult son with autism. When they suspended the funding last year on World Autism Day, which I'm sure you're familiar with that day. She's about in her 70s, you know, really amazing woman. There was a committee meeting. So she was testifying, I guess. I don't know how you would say that.
Yeah.
And her son only had one word, really, the whole time, was just mama. And he was in his 40s.
Yeah.
And when they were done, I walked out with her, and he just walked back and forth. And it was basically a 40-year-old Declan. You know, he was just walking up and down the hallways of the Capitol. And I went with her to the women's room where she needed to change his diaper. And this, again, was my – and I told her, I said, I thank you so much, because now I know I'm going to make it. I'm going to be Angie in my pantsuit in the Capitol walking with Declan or wherever. She goes, he's my walking buddy. But it is something where – I mean, Angie obviously is still advocating for her son and for other families. And there is – when you say triggering moment, it has – I mean, people need to know – he listened to that moment. And I don't think that everybody does. And even if it just means, like you said, contacting your legislator.
Yeah.
I think this week for many people is going to be a triggering moment, don't you think?
I would hope so. That's the thing about democracy is it's ours. You know,
yes.
And if you don't participate, you have made a choice. You've chosen to let other people run your life in this way. So if you're willing to do that, then great. Don't complain about it. But if you are willing to spend the time, and it's not that hard. Like you said, these are accessible people.
Yes.
I mean, you can get a meeting within a week most of the time.
Absolutely.
And you'll get a half hour minimum.
With your aldermen, your committee people, you know.
Everybody. You name it.
Absolutely.
Right. And, you know, for us, you know, we're dealing with a wide range of issues concerning our children that have, you know, special needs really doesn't even begin to describe the level of care that most of our kids require. So, you know, we really especially have a need to get involved because we're absolutely dependent for our kids' future on state services, insurance, basic protections, educational opportunities.
A life plan.
Often, everything.
All
it
of it.
Runs the gamut.
And again, in this, you know, we were talking about our kids specifically, but I mean, there are so many things that everyone's going to deal with at some point in their life that they can seek help from their legislators, find out what's available to them. Why is something being done a certain way? Maybe if you're dealing with cancer in your family, maybe you have an elderly parent who needs care and you want to find out what the resources are and how things are done. You have to reach out, because the things that people are in pain about this week, yes, it is about jobs. And also your legislators, they have job fairs. I just saw postings that Representative Martwick and Senator Mulroe, you know, they have these job fairs. Do you know, go to their websites, find out what they're doing in your community. Is it about your retirement? Are you worried about that? Find out what they're doing to protect your pensions.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be for altruistic motives. I mean, they have to serve you if you have a particular need. You don't have to go out and crusade, you know, for the entire world to be improved, but you should.
Right. Well, but one step at a time. We are hanging out with Chris Kennedy. He is an attorney and an advocate and someone I want to talk to you about local politics. Also, Heather Lally. We'll talk pies anytime. I love that stuff. Well, by the way, we have an interview with Jane Lynch coming up later, too. We interviewed Jane Lynch earlier today, and we're going to air that later. Our King of Geeks is also hanging out in studio. Elliot, who's your representative?
Right now, I know it's Fred Crespo.
And the senator?
Oh, my goodness.
More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Roger, grab a seat with us if you want to sit down for a little bit before you go back to the newsroom. You got time. Come sit down with us. Roger Battis is going to grab a chair, hang out with us. I just like being around people this week. I don't know what it is. I just want to Joining us in the studio is Heather Lally, whose piece on pumpkin pies comes out in just a few days in the Chicago Tribune. And I think I want to go for the – I like the idea of honey fig with marshmallow on top.
It was quite tasty.
That sounds really good. Do you like pumpkin pie, Chris Kennedy?
Yeah, no.
See, is it the texture?
Yeah, it's just weird. I'm not a big fan. Sorry.
Well, if you try some of these pumpkin pies, they might convert you.
How about pumpkin ice cream pie?
I'll eat the ice cream.
Do you not like pumpkin lattes? Just the whole pumpkin adventure, not for you?
It's just not for me.
Oh, wow. Roger, are you a pumpkin guy?
No, I'll go with Chris. I never get into it unless it's layers of whipped cream.
Okay. That brings up a good question. Whipped cream or Cool Whip?
Oh, whipped cream.
I like Cool Whip. Cool Whip?
Why do you say it like that?
What do you mean?
Whip. What?
Cool Whip.
Whip?
Whip. Orange Whip. Orange Whip. Three Orange Whips. What's happening? Cool Whip or...
I'll go with the Cool Whip because of the dairy stuff.
Because of the dairy? What do you mean?
Well, lactose-free. I think it's lactose-free Cool Whip.
I don't know. We're talking politics. I don't know how I did this, but I'm pie happy tonight.
Well, getting ready. I was down in the lobby, and I smelled the trees, the pine they're putting up around the entrance.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, hello.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah. And it's a double celebration this year, too, by the way. It's right, because Hanukkah's right there.
Hanukkah's Christmas Eve.
How do I say challah? Challah?
I've always called it, all my life, Chali.
Holly?
Chali.
There's no E.
I know.
There's a C at the front.
Right, C-H.
Yes.
And then at the end, it's A-H. But in our family, we've always said Chali. Pass the Chali. And it's not a...
And Elliot, they make fun of the way we talk in Spanish.
Yeah, I was gonna say. they're just breaking all their own rules.
Yeah,
no, we're not.
It's like when Brett Favre mispronounces his own name. Because if you're going to say...
Favre.
It should be Favre, right. But no, the R can be anywhere. We'll just pronounce it this way.
I'm locking into the silly because it's been a stressful week. We were talking last night about how some people are very afraid. And people are now being made fun of for being scared or being upset. And I have moments, Chris, we were talking about why people are afraid. I have these moments of maybe this is a good time to go, not they go low, we go high. They go low, we go, I can't even anymore.
There is some of that. I mean, the just sense of exasperation that you want nothing to do with it.
Right.
And there are forces in the world that I enjoy the background.
I know. Isn't that good?
Yeah, it's nice. It's soothing.
It's like it's our wrap up music for the hour. But we're still going to be here after midnight.
Yeah. So not showing up is it favors some groups.
Right.
So, making the tone ugly, making people throw their hands up and say, oh, they're all terrible. That is the response they're looking for.
Right.
They don't want more people coming out and there's less control for them. So if nothing else, assert yourself into that.
Right.
Take part.
Right. Take part. We are hanging out in the Allstate Showcase studio. We were talking about the events of the week. We are also taking your calls, 312-981-7200. Coming up after the news, we are going to talk to Representative John Cabello, who has won his seat again. He's a representative for the Rockford area and was an early supporter of Donald Trump and continued to be. So I want to talk to him and see how his week went. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. We have more people in studio, and I'm excited to welcome them. We have Eric Elk, who is a Republican political strategist. We have Chris Kennedy, who is an attorney and has worked advocating for individuals with autism in the state of Illinois. We have Ken Jakubowski, who is a crisis communications expert, and my trusty sidecar, Elliot Serrano, our chief geek officer. And joining us on the line is a friend of the show. Congratulations, Representative John Cabello, on winning your election this week. How are you doing tonight?
Great. How are you?
I'm very well. I had not seen your text on Tuesday because my phone died that night. I would have loved to have spoken to you that evening. How did the day unfold for you on election night?
Well, obviously we were still trying to get everybody out to the polls and watching all the other House races in the state, and obviously watching the presidential unfold as well.
And a lot of people were surprised. And did you have a sense that it was going to go for Trump on Tuesday night?
Well, I did, only because when you saw how many people were showing up to Hillary Clinton's rallies, and then how many people were showing up to now President-elect Donald Trump's rallies. He just dwarfed the size of hers. When I was driving around this state talking on behalf of him, just the amount of people that were showing up was unbelievable. You know, everybody thought that Hillary was supposed to win this state by 35 to 40 points, and she only won by 17. So just looking at our state and seeing what happened around the country is no surprise.
And in the last couple of days, are you sort of, I guess, is he headed in the right direction already? Because he ran for a year very specific things, like throwing out Obamacare completely. It's garbage. It's terrible. And today he said, oh, well, there's some things about it that are great, and I really want to protect that. And Chris Kennedy was telling me off the air that the parts that he likes are, in fact, the most expensive elements of
the mandate to cover pre-existing conditions, and also to keep kids on until 26. Those are two of the most expensive.
I was excited when I heard that. Yeah. Is that pretty much, was that what you had expected, Representative Cabello?
No, I mean, obviously, he's just putting together his transition team now. So anybody that thinks that they knew what he may or may not do, you know, he gives you an idea. But I didn't
Representative Cabello, he didn't give us an idea. He said throw it out completely. There's audio after audio of that. I'm just curious.
Yeah, I can't answer that. I mean, we're going to have to wait and see. But it's something that if he feels strongly about and transition teams feel strongly about, then I guess we'll have to wait and see.
And what do you think so far of the transition team? I know that he has now Vice President-elect Pence is now going to be the head of transition.
Yes. I mean, again, you know, things evolve rapidly sometimes. And the one thing I think I know about President-elect Trump is if he doesn't like the way one thing is going, he's going to make that change very quickly. I don't think he has any problem getting or moving somebody out of the way to put somebody else in that he thinks might do a better job.
And we've been talking a lot this week, too. You can obviously have been watching the news. A lot of people who are afraid. And are you hearing from any of your constituents? I know that you have obviously a lot of support in the Rockford area, but do you have any constituents who have reached out to you that are afraid?
Afraid of what?
Well, afraid of how much their lives might change if they happen to be Muslim or Mexican immigrants, if they happen to be gay, if they are women. You're not hearing from any constituents?
Zero.
Okay.
We've not heard any of that. I mean, we've had presidential elections in this country for a very long time. I don't think any reasonable person should be afraid of the next president that's coming in.
Okay.
I think that's kind of ridiculous.
So, well, I mean, you know, there are. I don't know if dismissing people who are afraid is necessary to say that they're ridiculous, but that's we can differ there. What are the plans for next week for the veto session? What's involved in a veto session in November?
Well, we've got obviously a budget that we need to get done. There's many things I think that we've put into our veto book. Some of the bills that have been vetoed by the governor. Obviously, the Speaker of the House doesn't necessarily always tell us what is going to take place. We'll know more next Monday evening as to what we believe will be brought up. But I think hopefully they will be meeting to try to, you know, start getting this these budget talks moving in the right direction again.
And I want to make sure my panel knows if you have any questions or comments for Representative Cabello. Yes, Eric, you don't want to say anything? Because I am going to be down there next week, and I've not been down there for a veto session. I've been there for a lot of the budget conversations. And now that, you know, hopefully the dust will settle next week. I know that in the legislature there were four seats that were gained by the Republican side?
Yes.
And in the Senate there were two?
Correct.
And how does that change the dynamic when it comes to working things out?
Well, I think it gives us a little bit more of a voice. I think the Speaker is going to have to include us a little bit more but that will be in January. So I would expect there would be a little movement in veto, but a very vigorous lame duck session. And that would be in January, and that's where you want to hold on to your hat.
Eric?
Hey, Representative, this is Eric Elk. I just wanted to ask you, earlier this week, Representative Will Davis of Crestwood filed a 581-page amendment, and this is a very similar to Representative Frink's bill, 4300, that would raise taxes on employers by more than $2.5 billion. Do you think that that will move during a veto session?
I would not think so. I have not seen that bill. Obviously, there's somewhere around 8,000 bills that have been out there, so I don't know when, if he just filed it. It would still have to go through a normal process. It would have to have been a shell bill, I think, that they would have to be able to move. To move something like that in the veto session, you'd have to have 71 votes to get it out of the House. I just don't see that that happening.
Well, there
excellent.
Wow, is that something that...
I think it would be bad for employers. I think it would be bad for manufacturers.
So it raises taxes on employers?
$2.5 billion.
Why?
Good question.
And how?
It's bad. I'll send you the write-up on it.
I know him.
I mean, I'm working with the Manufacturing Association. They're adamantly opposed to it. They were opposed to the bill when Representative Franks came up with it. This is very similar language. I think it would hurt job creators significantly.
Well, I may call him and suggest that he focus on perhaps cutting spending.
Oh, look, we have a strategy meeting going on in the year.
I mean,
so far, I like it a lot.
Well, and I'm a strong Democrat. I mean, it's just for some reason, our party seems to always just let's raise taxes. And then they've already got a plan to spend all the money and borrow more. I mean, it doesn't make any sense at a certain point.
My hope is that one of the things that President-elect Donald Trump does is, with making America great, and a lot of people have said, well, like after World War II and during Eisenhower, that was a great period. You know what? Parts of it were, and especially the part where the tax bracket was 90%. Representative Cabello, it was wonderful to talk to you, and I look forward to seeing you next week.
Great. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you so much. Talk to you later, and more after this on 720 WGN.
This weekend, take along Chicago sports action with 720 WGN today.
The Wildcats are back on the road. They travel to West Lafayette to take on the Purdue Boilermakers. The kickoff at 11.
Tomorrow afternoon.
Guys, I can't take it.
The best Bears postgame show with Dan Hampton, Ed Obradovich, Jake Cutler, Gut Plummel, and Glenn Kozlowski. The Chevy Hampton OB show with Koz. Right after Bears Bucks at 3 o'clock. Fall into Chicago sports this weekend on 720 WGN.
Hi, I'm Brian from 1-800-GOT-JUNK. We're here to make junk disappear. All you have to do is point.
What if I point at something and it's really hard for you to get to it?
Give it a try.
Okay, how about that filing cabinet way back there? Am I dreaming this?
No, sir.
It was really there.
And now it's really gone.
What happens next?
We recycle the recyclables.
And donate the donatables.
So planet Earth stays happy and healthy.
Call 1-800-GOT-JUNK or visit 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com.
Living gluten-free does not mean a life void of all the food you love. It actually means more delicious food when it comes to Sweet Alley's. Tis the season and Sweet Alley's has all things Thanksgiving. Traditional pumpkin pie, stuffing, pumpkin loaves, mini pumpkin cheesecakes, pumpkin spice cupcakes, and challah. Nationally named a top 10 gluten-free bakery, Sweet Alley's has everything you need to make your holiday. Visit or call their Hinsdale location at 630-908-7175 or their Glenview location at 224-432-5530 for holiday orders. Visit sweetalleys.com to learn more.
We can beat them all.
Service to a green tea.
Our green tea windows are most energy efficient. Increase the beauty and value of your home with our exceptional, energy efficient, EPA certified windows. They're made here in the U.S. with a lifetime warranty, and our installers have a minimum 7 years experience. And listen to this. Our windows have the newest technology, self-cleaning glass. Yes, our special glass actually cleans itself. Dirt, dust, and water just rolls right off.
Service to a green tea.
There are so many deals out there for windows, but green tea can beat them all. Yes, green tea can beat any window deal and save you a lot of money. Plus, 0% financing is available. Call us now for details and a free estimate. Call 800-5-GREEN-TEA.
Green Tea Services. Service to a
green tea.
800-5-GREEN-TEA.
800-5-GREEN-TEA. Or greenteaservices.com.
You are listening pretty late, and I have to go through all my, so many notes in front of me. I have pies. I have legislation. It's prime time, a primetime showdown against the best in the East. The Blackhawks skate against the Canadiens Sunday night at 6 on WGN TV Sports. Oh, there it is. Why does, you know what that, I think that song, every time I hit that song, Craig, it does the exact same thing. You are listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is Elliot Serrano, our Chief Geek Officer. How are you doing, Elliot?
I'm doing well. I'm so excited. I just saw a picture of the wall that Trump's going to build.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Is it pretty?
It's beautiful.
All right.
It's a fence.
Oh.
It's not a wall. It's a fence.
So what do we have so far? So far, it's, hold on. Yeah, it's a, like, hold on, yeah, a second. It's not a wall. It's a fence.
It's a fence.
It's not that Obamacare is garbage. It's actually really good. We're going to keep it.
Right.
And at least
the most expensive part.
Yes. And we're going to drain the swamp and fill it with the people who are already in the swamp. We're just, yeah. I can't.
Well, Dave, it makes sense if you don't think about it.
It does. Dave Lundy's on the line with us. Ken Jacobowski in studio. Chris Kennedy also in studio. Eric Elk. Dave, you were listening to Representative Cabello, and two things that came up during that conversation, that, and one Eric Elk brought up about the budget. Did you have more information on that you want to talk about?
No, I just I think it's important, the instinct of everybody to say, well, cut. And the reality is you know, Patty, because you've seen this yourself when looking at the social services, we actually have cut a lot out of the Illinois budget. Our problem right now is that the taxation is not is not matching up with the spending. And in fact, when the taxes were raised, we actually started to cut into our structural deficit. We started cutting into our unpaid bills. And it's only the lack of a budget for the last 2 years and the fact that we are, frankly, under-taxing, and I say this as somebody who would, you know, pay a lot more money on this and doesn't like it, but frankly, we're one of the lowest in terms of state taxation states in the region and in the country. And, you know, you kind of can't expect the services if you're not willing to pay the taxes. And for the record, that's also true on the federal level. But I know we're gonna get to that and chat about the president-elect and his grand plans to keep spending, but cut taxes.
Well, so far the direction he's gone in just today alone, I'm like, oh, okay. I think we will maybe. I mean, from day to day, I think it changes. One of the questions I've been asking is, should Republicans be concerned? And I think I asked Eric Elk this when we were leaving on Tuesday night. When you already see completely different things that he's saying and doing compared to what he campaigned on for an entire year.
Funny how that works, isn't it? Yeah, you know, it's always easier to campaign, and then when you suddenly start confronting the realities of what governing is about, all of a sudden those grandiose plans that encouraged everybody to come on board the Trump train suddenly go, oh, yeah, I guess Obamacare's not so bad.
But how can you find that out in 3 days? I don't get how.
It was really record time. I got to tell you, it took George W. Bush, you know, months before he started, you know, breaking those kind of promises in Congresses.
Dave, how you doing, Dave?
You have a problem with that, Eric?
No. This is Ken, Dave.
Hi, Ken.
How are you, buddy?
I'm good. Sorry, I couldn't join you guys. I'm a single dad tonight. Got to take care of the young one.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's interesting is the president appeared to do a heck of a sales job on the ACA. It was interesting when Trump was making his off-the-cuff remarks when he was with the president in the Oval Office, and he said that the president talked about some, I can't remember the exact words, but some great achievements. And I wondered, okay, that has to be the ACA. And what's interesting is he seems to have convinced Trump and their transition team to keep the most expensive parts of the ACA. Well, how are you going to pay for that? If you start taking away the individual mandate, that's how it gets paid for. So in a sense, the president is brilliant, because if he convinces them to keep those two parts, when they actually start to go through this and figure out how to reshape it, they're going to figure out that they can't. So the ACA, we're going to see probably more of the ACA than just those two pieces stay, because they're going to figure out that this is extremely complex and very complicated, and it's all interrelated. And if you start to peel things off, then dominoes start to fall, and they want to, they've already gone on record publicly. And I saw the 60 Minutes excerpt that he does Sunday night. He makes it very clear they're going to keep those two pieces.
Yep.
So I think they're in a box, and I think the president boxed them in brilliantly. It's wonderful.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. And, I mean, frankly, for those of us in the fact-based world who've been complaining about this with Trump for, you know, pretty much since the start of the campaign, when he says these grandiose things and he's like, oh, we're going to do this, this, and it's all going to suddenly work, and we're going to do it by magic. Zit! The little magic wand. And you're like, hey, the numbers don't work. There's a reason Republicans have struggled since Obamacare passed to come up with an alternative plan that achieves the things that people like without the big rate increases. It's when rhetoric meets up with reality, and sometimes your promises fail really quickly, though. I have to tell you, the speed that this is happening is breathtaking. I cannot remember politicians breaking their promises before even taking office this fast.
That's what I was surprised by.
But he would say, I mean, he reneged on promises. He reversed himself within minutes during the campaign.
Right.
I mean, within a day, he would say has the two advantage. Different things.
Exactly, Chris. He has the advantage of having been on both sides of virtually every single issue you can think of. Yeah. So he's completely fresh. There is one thing, though, that I do know about Donald Trump. And that is think about what Donald Trump has done all his life. He's built things, and he's built big, majestic things, not small little apartment complexes, huge buildings. He is going to have a heck of an infrastructure plan, which is going to make a lot of Democrats and a lot of unions very happy. Yeah. It's not going to be just a couple hundred million bucks. It's going to be huge, and you're going to see in the first quarter of the first term, you're going to see him with a hard hat on, standing by a port, standing by the side of a road. He may end up going down as builder in chief, because that's the easiest thing for him to do, and he can get it done. He can get it done now because the Republicans are scared to death that he'll campaign against them in 2 years, and out they go.
But I think the one thing
we got to remember is it's one thing for the president elect to go out and stake out some ground on something. They don't enact legislation. They don't enact this. They just sign it. So, you know, he can kind of say whatever he wants, and he is, but it's going to be up to a Republican House and a Republican Senate to enact it.
And to avoid a filibuster from Dems.
But the problem the Republicans have in Congress is if they end up taking away the ACA and they don't replace it with something, they're going to lose Michigan. They're going to lose Wisconsin. They're going to lose Pennsylvania next time. Folks have bet their economic futures on Trump. They put up with all the craziness, and they went in with Trump because it's to them they felt he was he would be a better champion for them than Hillary Clinton. And we can talk about why that was.
Let's talk about that part of it too, because we touched on this a little bit with Representative Cabello about the things that the other side is feeling this week, and you know why people voted the way they did. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Dave Lundy joins us on the line. He is the president of Aileron Communications. And thank you again. That was my first time today enjoying the luncheon that you have every month for political junkies.
You chose a very special one.
Well, why do you think I showed up today? I mean, I was like, I just need to be in a room full of people who are talking about this from different points of view. Republicans outnumbered significantly, it seemed, but they were. I mean, am I right about that? That was my sense.
Oh, yeah, Republicans are always outnumbered at my lunches. I can never get Eric Elk over there.
Why don't you come? You can come sit at the kids' table with me, Eric. We have to beg for scraps over on the side.
Well, yes, that's what happens when you come late. But
yes, that's what happens when you host a show and go to bed at 5 in the morning.
Dave, I heard it was very emotional.
It was a little intense for me as well as for everybody else. And frankly, as I told you guys, I was going to cancel it. I do this lunch every month, political media insiders, junkies. It's off the record, invitation only kind of deal. But I just got this overwhelming outpouring of folks who said, dude, we need the catharsis.
Yeah, so. And that seemed to be the case. And, there was a little bit of, I would say, just strutting amongst the Republicans. Not entirely, but...
They have a right to have a little bit of a...
Swagger?
A hippity skip to their walk, simply because whether they were smart or whether they got lucky, they certainly were very confident. Nobody gave them a shot. And whenever you can pull off one of those, which is rare... okay, we'll give you a couple of days to gloat. That's fine.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And I told them. I told them off the get-go. I'm like, look, you guys can serve all the crow you'd like today. Just be civil. And so that's what we tried. Mostly succeeded. But,
yes. The author who wrote the book about the Defender was describing how his mother felt as a survivor of the Holocaust. And It was an interesting moment because someone was like, ah, come on. And it reminded me of that moment just a little bit ago when Representative Cabello said that people's fears are ridiculous. And that hurts my heart because I know so many people who are afraid, because I think it's about the idea of going backwards on so much ground that has been gained, whether it's in the LGBTQ community, for women, for minorities, working towards acceptance. And this presidency, this election seems to have just gone on the face of that and thrown people into a panic. And now they're being dismissed as, whiny and crying. And it's not just millennials. Sure, you're seeing that on the news and in media. But I know, and I said this earlier, people in their 30s, their 40s, or 50s, I know all ages. Children are crying. I mean, how do you just write off a whole group of people that are concerned and downright afraid in some cases?
Well, and I think it's more than that. I think you've got genuine fear because in his campaign for the presidency, it wasn't benign neglect of the alt-right. It was active encouragement of the alt-right, of the white nationalists, the Nazis, the KKK, who are having a rally in North Carolina to celebrate their champion's election as president. And that's their words, not mine. And I think that for those of us who, whether it's Jews or Latinos or LGBT, we see that and we're like, whoa, who are they coming for next? And at what point does the president-elect recognize that he has a responsibility to the nation to repudiate those elements and not encourage those elements?
And the people who want to write those off who are afraid, they also need to, instead of saying shut up or you're ridiculous or you're annoying or you're whiny, what you need to say is, I am not racist. Do not be afraid of me. I voted for Trump, and I do not support racist or misogynist or hateful speech.
Well, if I remember right, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't the Dreamers, wasn't that an executive order?
Yes.
That I thought was overturned by the courts, correct? And then there was a modification to it, and it was put through again by Obama. Is that correct?
I don't remember what the current status was, because everybody assumed it would just get taken care of under a Clinton presidency. And at this point, you're right, Ken. It's one of the many, 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 many things that were taken care of administratively that are going to be rolled back under Donald Trump.
It certainly is. If I were a dreamer, I would certainly be very, very concerned that that's on the chopping block, because you have nothing else to go by other than what Donald Trump has said repeatedly throughout the campaign. And there are a lot of people who are very vulnerable out there who are scared to death. And I don't – look, it's obviously there's no realization of that on the president-elect's side or his team or even Republicans in Washington.
Well, the one thing I do hear from them is the sort of he will grow into the position type argument. Like, he will become – more of the president for everyone than during the campaign. And to me, that just it doesn't jibe with everything he has ever said or done, not just as a candidate, but even before that. So it's kind of like, and I was a prosecutor, when a victim of domestic violence decides to get married to the abuser on the idea that it's going to get better then. And
he's not always like that, or I know his good side.
He's still, there's good in him. I just know it. It'll come out when all of a sudden we give him the most power of anybody in the world.
Eric, as our conservative, how do you feel about people who are afraid?
So on the notion of, he'll grow into it and that's not possible. I mean, the same thing was said about President Obama. I mean, a lot of folks said, you know, what the heck? I mean, everybody thought it was crazy that he had just taken the Senate office in 2004.
He was a community organizer, Eric. That was the entire line, wasn't it? He's a community organizer.
From Africa. Right. And,
oh, well, but he was
it's like being a mayor without any responsibility.
No, but, you know.
Right.
I mean, did Reagan have, you know, a lot of folks said, oh.
He was the governor of California.
He was. But a lot of, you know, folks on the left said, oh, he's a B actor. You know, he has no business being in the White House, everything else.
He acted with a chimp.
Well, and Errol Flynn, actually.
Right. They also
I'm not saying those are the same thing. I'm just saying.
Campaigns that were very respectful of the institutions and of other people.
Right.
And their tone all throughout was not utterly contemptuous.
You know, that's an interesting point.
As Trump has been.
We were talking about this after the show, Ken. Dave, I think you'd left, and we were talking about what the next election's going to look like. Let's take a break here because I do want to know we were talking about how, you know, Donald Trump just says the most outrageous, crazy things. I don't think another candidate can do it the way he did, but I do want to know if the tone has changed and the way, you know, people campaign, if it's what effect that's going to have. And let's talk a little bit more about this election, but also what happens next. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio, talking about the events of the week. And we've gotten some comments and requests to move on. I think that this is the story. There's so much ground to cover. Things are going to happen day by day, I think, for quite a while. And joining me in studio is one of my favorite sidecars, Elliot Serrano, who I know is still taking it all in, aren't you?
Yeah. Wait, are people like getting upset about us talking about this?
I don't know.
Well, if they're upset, I suggest go to your safe space.
Oh, yeah. There was somebody who was offended. Someone is offended that we're talking about how some people are afraid. That offends her.
Then go to your safe space.
Go to your safe space.
If you're offended by other people being offended, go to your safe space.
So Eric just showed me an article from the Wall Street Journal that Peggy Noonan wrote, Reagan's speechwriter. And right there in the middle, it says many fear they will no longer be respected. They need to know things they rely on are still there. They don't understand what has happened and are afraid. They need and deserve reassurance. Trump apparatus, find a way.
I think that couldn't be said any better.
Well, and I also wonder, at some point, I think Republicans are going to need to be reassured as well. Because one of the things Dave Lundy and I, we've all talked about, are the promises that he made. And today he said he thinks that there are great parts of Obamacare, even though just 2 weeks ago he said it's a disaster. We're going to throw it. We're going to get rid of it. And today he said there are parts of it he loves. Catastrophe. And Dave Lundy, one of the things he pointed out was he also said he was going to drain the swamp. How's that turning out?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Everybody outside of office campaigns about ending special interests, and we all understand what special interests are. Your interests are special. Mine are legitimate. But the whole idea of draining the swamp is that Trump promised he's not going to put all these lobbyists in charge, and how stupid are our leaders? They keep bringing these lobbyists and then wonder why we get what we get. Well, lo and behold, on his transition team, what has he done? He's stocking the thing with lobbyists. And there's a guy who's been a consultant for years to Verizon and other telecom. Well, guess what? He's picking staff members for the FCC. And there's a guy who's a big lobbyist for energy, and he is helping with the energy independence portfolio. And there's a guy who's been, you know, working for who's a lobbyist for the food industry.
Did you say energy independence lobby?
He's a lobbyist for energy companies, and he's going to, quote, hold the energy independence portfolio.
But nobody's been hired.
These are the guys who are going to be doing the hiring. These are the guys who are in charge of different segments of the transition.
Remember, the federal government
is mad.
Are they helping with some of the policy issues because these folks have worked these policy issues so much and Trump hasn't?
I don't think we know that yet. But we do know that when you're in a transition, you've got to come up with thousands of appointees.
Exactly.
And these are the folks that are going to be vetting them. I love that. Exactly. The energy independence folks. Sounds great. Sounds like solar energy and wind power. Nope.
What about nuclear?
Nope.
Nuclear. Nuclear? I can't say it anymore. Nuclear. George Bush ruined that word for me. I don't trust the way I say it anymore. Sorry, continue, Dave.
No, look, it's a so who are we getting? You're getting the lobbyists, you know, you're getting the retreads, and Ken and I were talking about that. I mean, that's a standard thing. You're not going to staff up the federal government with thousands of people who know nothing about the federal government. You got to bring people in, and I don't have a big problem with that. I just have a problem with the hypocrisy, and we're rolling back so quickly on so many of these promises, and frankly, I think it's because Donald Trump walked in the door, and it was the moment from The Candidate, from the Robert Redford movie, The Candidate, where he walks in the door, he wins the election, goes, what do we do now?
Well, you know what, Dave? That's exactly correct. I mean, he was on the both sides of just about every issue you can think of. Wasn't very deep thinker. From a campaign perspective, it was great. He was very disciplined. He stayed very, very 50,000 foot level, very emotional, and pulled at heartstrings and pulled the old, you know, the old populist foghorn over everybody, blew it all over everyone, and he won. But now he walks in the door, and now reality hits him. Well, you can't really do it that way. And it's going to hit him on ACA. Because they have to keep some of it in place. He's already committed to keeping the two most expensive things. And as we discussed in an earlier segment, that pretty much boxes it in. You really can't eliminate much else because it all pays for that.
Yeah, but you eliminate pre-existing condition exclusions, you're automatically taking on a huge population of people with known needs. Who's going to pay for that? The people who are young and healthy,
Mexico.
Who don't have those conditions.
Mexico.
Right.
Mexico.
Oh, sorry,
right.
Wrong.
So you have to do something to make sure that those people come in, and unless you have some other magical means of doing it.
Hey, it's his problem. It's not ours. And as far as the wall's concerned, he's also now pulled back from that. Today, apparently, he discusses that in a 60 Minutes interview.
Does he really?
I don't have many specifics on it, but he has pulled back. Yes. Absolutely pulled back from the wall.
So, so there's all this angst, right? But I've heard nobody talk about or assign any kind of blame to the Clintons. I think that
for what?
For losing.
Oh, there's no question. She blew this election. There's no question.
I mean, they have become Washington elites. I mean, we talked about this. In 92, Bill Clinton, or you know, a lot of people referred to him as
Bubba.
He was going to McDonald's. He related to a lot of people. And you know, they've been in Washington and government for so long now, and they've become these elitists.
Well, he was a fresh face back then.
Exactly.
He was young. He was the new. He was the change agent. And Hillary, unfortunately, had 30 years.
He no longer eats at McDonald's. He's a vegan.
And do you remember how brilliant they were? By the way, he looks so gaunt now, too.
He looks awful.
I feel like I give him a burger.
He needs a cheeseburger.
Just give him a burger.
He needs meat, man.
Do you remember how well they tapped into young voters in that election? Do you remember what it was? Elliot, you remember what it was? Rock the Vote. It was MTV. They had buses going around the country. They were registering young voters all over, they spurred the vote.
But think about what he did in that campaign. He was, by contrast to Hillary, he was brilliant at connecting with people on an emotional level.
Authentic.
You felt
feel your pain.
He's
a real politician.
He got
me. She was always wooden and aloof in terms of her feel, but isn't it amazing but they're elite, and yet the alternative is a billionaire who inherited
how much more elite
money.
Can you get, right? When perception.
But that underscores.
But he's an outsider.
I think
he was a Washington outsider,
and he was change. He was change, and this was a change election, as many elections are.
Dave, do you want to give us any last words before we let you go and can carry on with your evening?
Yeah, I mean, look, Erica, we spent most of my lunch today talking about all the things Hillary did wrong, and I was certainly leading the charge. But, you know, fundamentally, aside from the fact she already still has 600,000 more votes than Trump does and will wind up with a couple of million more, but fundamentally, this was a winnable election for Hillary Clinton. She took her eye off the ball. her campaign for the tens of millions of dollars I spent on polling. Apparently weren't polling Wisconsin, Michigan, or Pennsylvania, or they might have noticed they were having a problem before the last weekend. So
we weren't spending any time in those states either.
Right. She didn't go to Wisconsin from the primary on. It was like, come on. And again, I wouldn't know that because I'm not polling Wisconsin. But am I counting on those states? You have to do that. So it was the fundamental failures of blocking and tackling. Obviously, we can talk about the Comey. We can talk about misogynists. We can talk about all that. No, it's all true. But at the end of the day, it was a winnable race, and she lost it.
Right. I heard someone say during the luncheon that if she was not that there was misogyny. And people like, oh, and I heard people moan and go, oh, no. Look, could that have accounted for hundreds of thousands of votes? Maybe.
No.
Some. You have to believe that there's.
No.
Absolutely.
Maybe at the margins. It wasn't the difference in the election.
It wasn't with women.
Yeah, it wasn't the difference in the election. In fact, I maintain, given her inability to connect and appear authentic, given her inability to effectively communicate an economic plan that resonated with people in real life terms, it's astounding it was as close as it was. The only reason that it was as close as it was and was still winnable, despite how bad she was as a candidate, was because of all the misogyny, the sexual predator, the racism, the demagoguery. That drove a whole bunch of folks to Hillary. She still could have won. If she blocked and tackled.
Points, though, that Trump was trying to lose. It almost seemed as if he was trying to...
And yet, there's so much more to cover.
I think late in the campaign, he was baiting Hillary.
Yes.
Just as Hillary baited him in the first debate, he was baiting her because the more she focused just on him, she wasn't talking to voters about the economy. She wasn't connecting with voters. And she just missed it.
The conversation was all about her.
Let's talk after the news. And Dave, thank you so much for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Patty. I'll see you in Springfield.
Oh, that's right. I'll see you in Springfield. Veto session. It sounds like a party. More after
party
this.
Party on, baby.
That's right. More after this on 720 WGN. Hey.
Hillary said, congratulations, Donald.
That is very nice.
Come on. The tone since election night that he has tried to have is
good. I'm not disparaging him at all.
I actually give him an A so far. The only glitch, the tweeting.
Yes.
And I'm sure, from a security
perspective.
Yeah, but from a security perspective, they're going to stop that. So we're not going to be hearing much from him tweeting, and that's probably good for all of us.
I've always thought that there should be an app where if you're drunk texting or drunk tweeting, there should be like a firewall, right? Like he needs a Trump wall, a Trump firewall that he has to get through it before he sends out a tweet. Don't you think? Like there has to be, because he's not going to
hit. Is this a joke?
No, for real.
It'll say like, are you sure?
There's an app actually that will, before you drunk text, will ask
is
you,
is there really?
Are you sure? There is.
Are you
I'm
sure?
About it. Yeah,
are you sure about this?
Something like that, yeah.
You should have to answer like a couple of questions, maybe do a little math before.
I think it has something
before.
To do with, fat fingering the text. You know, if you screw up the text, it shows maybe there's some motor, deficiency due to alcohol intoxication.
You do like you do with your kids. You give them a fake phone that looks like the real phone. And then that way they think they're making phone calls, but they're not. So let Donald think he's tweeting.
Ooh.
But,
give him a dummy phone.
Yeah.
And because it's a phone that's it's fake.
A simulation. But yeah, as chief of staff go, here, Mr. President, here's your phone. Go on ahead, tweet.
Yeah, go ahead, tweet. Yeah. But then he'll know when he's not getting retweeted or liked. He'll know right away, won't he?
He probably reads his direct messages and other things that he gets at 3 in the morning. He's probably up reading, sifting through them. Oh, look at this guy in Chicago, this Jacobowski guy. What's he saying about me? Oh, what a moron. I'm sure he's up there in bed saying that.
I tagged him in the article that he has said that he did this interview with 60 Minutes that he plans on maintaining huge elements of Obamacare, and it's hope for families who are scared about losing their health care. Again, not ridiculous for being afraid to. Why would it be ridiculous for you to be afraid of losing health care? Why is it absurd? Why is it offensive to be afraid?
Because I'm keeping my health care. I'm not worried about your
health care. I see. So the people who aren't afraid,
I'm fine.
I think that the people who are afraid are stupid,
it's interesting that the same group of folks that misread the electorate on the Democratic side, you can call it the elites,
mm-hmm.
the Republican elites are now misreading the Democratic angst.
Right.
And everyone's talking past each other. And I think it started, it's been going on for a long time. But certainly election night, we heard terms in the wee hours of the morning called the white lash. That's what propelled Trump to the presidency. I've spent the last 2 days going through numbers. Anyone who thinks that this was a white lash vote missed the entire meaning of what happened here. This was about the economy.
Yes.
And about which candidate folks felt connected better with them and would be their champion in Washington. That's what this was about. Hillary had ample opportunities to do that. I think the race was as close as it was because of his racism and misogynistic attitudes and the sexual predator.
It drove away voters.
It kept her close.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, it kept her close.
Even Michael Moore says Trump is not a racist.
I don't think he is. I may be one of the few. I don't think he is. I just think he's of a different generation.
He emboldened.
He just retweets them.
There are racists who feel emboldened, whether or not it's his fault. I would argue that he has emboldened many people to act out in ways that are so vile and so ugly.
We have the tone and tenor of his populist message was...
It was a blame and other.
It has created an atmosphere in the wake of the election that's not a positive one.
No.
And that only he can bridge. And
yes.
He has to do this. He has to talk to the nation, and he has to tell folks, hey, this is not our country. This is not who mm-hmm. we are. This is not who we are as Americans. He has to do what Barack Obama does almost every speech. And I don't know if he's got it in him.
I don't know
if he has it in him.
Margaret, what did you want to say? How are you doing?
Yeah, oh, fine. Patty, yes, I have a question, and maybe your guest there could give a little more detail. What I've heard on the news the last couple of days is that Mr. Donald Trump would like to maybe either change or eliminate the Dodd-Frank Act, which was, purposely presented to help prevent the crises that happened with the banking system before, to prevent too large to fail banking systems and, banks in general. And could you explain in more detail so the general public could understand it better? And then if there are some changes, if it was eliminated completely, what might happen? Or what might some changes be that wouldn't be so serious that we as a nation could live with?
Yeah, it looks as though the transition team is saying that they will dismantle Dodd-Frank, which is the bank regulations, for those who don't know. And it was legislation that was passed in 2010, again, for the underlying financial crisis that we encountered in 2008 when the bubble burst and, you know, people like my husband lost their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any information on that, Ken or Eric?
The fact that in the absence of Dodd-Frank,
mm-hmm.
It led us to the worst economic disaster since the Depression. And Dodd-Frank really prevents the banks from hurting themselves. It limits what they can do. And
should we as a population start to be concerned when they're talking about this so early on? And if that comes to be, and would there be enough people in the Congress to prevent that from happening?
It's unclear. But if this is something that Republican leadership is talking about, and I think it is, I would expect that there will be they could have some success in rolling back all or portions of it. Frankly, I think it should go the other way. I think the banks, instead of getting mm-hmm. more freedom, I think the banks should get broken up.
My concern, I did not vote for Donald Trump, but the very people that seem to have voted for him are the people, or many of the people, that would get hurt if the same crisis started to occur again, because a lot of the people, as you said, Patty, especially whether they had a pension or they had a 401k or whatever amount of money in the banks, it affected the stock market, it affected the 401ks, pension plans. So those people that thought that he would be doing something to be benefiting them, that would hurt them desperately. So, I certainly hope that doesn't come to be, and I hope people would voice you know, strong opposition to that.
Yeah, I think one of the major components of that bill was the establishment of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And that's what Elizabeth Warren had headed for a while, and most recently made the news for busting Wells Fargo for giving people all these accounts and churning all this money. That, I think, would be a major, major setback for individual consumers. So it's easy to say, let's repeal it because it's too much paperwork. But the reality is that there are some significant protections in there that would have prevented a lot of what happened in the crisis.
Well, I hope there are some people on his transition team that have the sense, and I hope he has enough sense, you know, not to see that happen, you know, happen where it's eliminated either completely or that the changes are so drastic that we go through the same recession, you know, that happened in 2008.
Well, and I'm wondering if the stock market going, you know, skyrocketing is because everyone's like, oh, great, now deregulation, these guys want to take off all the handcuffs.
Well, I think they're looking at infrastructure spending. And, you know, Caterpillar stock is way up. Interestingly, Smith & Wesson, which has now changed its name to American something or other. It sounds like an outdoor tent company. But Smith & Wesson stock and I think one other major gun manufacturer are down more than 20% their stock because everyone assumed that if Hillary Clinton were elected president, people would go out and buy guns like crazy. That was the assumption built into the price of those companies prior to the election, and that has come tumbling down. So I don't think if Dodd-Frank is repealed in some fashion, I don't think it directly leads to the same crisis that we had, but it could. I mean, what it was designed to do is to kind of prevent some of the excesses that our financial institutions engaged in. They gambled. They gambled with your money, and they lost, and we all lost as a result. And it was really – that's not what a bank's supposed to do. Banks aren't supposed to do that. And it kind of reined them in. Interestingly enough, Wells Fargo says it's what led to what they did.
Yes. Which is create fraudulent accounts. The Dodd-Frank bill did made them create fake accounts.
Yes, because it prevented them from engaging in certain revenue-generating activity, so they had to figure out certain other ways to generate revenue, and it put tremendous pressure on the sales team, and so they concocted this scheme. Frankly, I don't know how Wells Fargo survives. Anyone who would bank there, good luck.
Exactly. Margaret, can I thank you? Margaret,
okay, thank you.
No, I want to give you a prize. Can you hold on the line? I'm going to figure out what that is because I want to thank you for asking a question that nobody has asked and I hadn't even thought about. I mean, I know that it's been a little bit in the news, but thank you for adding that to the conversation.
Okay, thanks a lot, Patty. Have a good night. I'll hang on.
Yes, hang on, and Craig will get your information, and I'll figure out. I have to look up I have gifts. Do you want to go to the Lincoln Park Zoo, like the brew lights, the for the Christmas lights? Would that be good?
Pizza? I'd be happy.
You rather have pizza?
Yeah.
Oh.
You can have one.
All right, we'll send you a Lou Malnati's gift card. Hang on the line.
Great.
Everyone go to, yeah, absolutely. Everyone can go to loumalnati's.com for the best pizza in Chicago. Thank you, Margaret. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. It's a beautiful autumnal evening. It's finally November. It's getting a little chilly tonight. Joining me in studio is sidecar Elliot Serrano. Elliot, I haven't had a chance to talk. It's been a lot of stuff going on. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, and I just needed to bring up a couple things related to all this conversation. Really just maybe one thing is that this constant misrepresenting nature when it comes to allegories, because, of course, Donald Trump kept talking about draining the swamp, the swamp. We need swamps, guys. We need our wetlands, okay? Without wetlands, we have lots of problems.
Wait, what is the purpose of draining a swamp? Is it to get the crocodiles out?
Well, no, I think it's
because D.C.
Washington, D.C. is built in a swamp.
Okay.
That's why it's so humid there, and so you get a lot of mosquitoes, even though you don't see a swamp.
Right, there was a big fight about having it being the capital in the first place. They wanted it in Philly.
It was a swamp. So I think his saying draining the swamp is more of a...
To leave it with what?
Well, it's funny that you asked because what about the swamp animals?
See, because that annoys me as much as people. But look, here, they talk about bear weather when the Chicago Bears play in bear weather. Bears go into hibernation in winter.
That's true. Okay.
The Chicago Bears.
And
right.
So
yes,
the Chicago Bears. Bears have done that a lot the last two, three years.
So when everyone says we're waiting for bear weather, again, misrepresenting nature in an allegory.
There you go.
You don't want bear weather. You want summer. That's when the Bears are active.
You know, Patty, this is the first time in the entire presidential campaign anybody has discussed climate change.
It's absolutely true.
Well, the musical interlude.
Yes, don't come around here no more.
It's a nice lead into a guy who's had a really bad last few weeks, and it's Chris Christie. You know, his gig was
bad a couple of years because I think he felt like he was on the path to the presidency as well.
Well,
a couple years ago before the Bridgegate.
He did.
Well,
and
that
then
was
he,
the reason for the Bridgegate. He wanted bipartisan support and he didn't get it, so he fought.
And he pivoted off of the Donald's praise of him in some private interviews that he did with publications. And when Trump was asked, is there anybody that you would hire out of this? He said, well, yeah, there are a couple. And he always would mention Christie. So, of course, Christie pulls out, endorses the Donald, is right by his side. And then a little thing called Bridgegate really intensified. And he's all ensnared in that. It's possible he could still get indicted. And today he lost his gig as head of the transition. He's still going to be around, but it's probably kind of out the door. But so it's been a bad few weeks for Chris Christie.
Attorney General.
He will not be.
I think there's also, you know, there's that, but then there's a backstory that, you know, isn't discussed much. You know, talking about Trump's son-in-law, Jared, who's married to his daughter, Ivanka. His father went to jail, and Chris Christie was the one who put him away.
He was the prosecutor. Yep. That is it. Jared has taken on a very important role in the campaign and clearly in the transition. He was with the chief of staff yesterday at the White House while Obama was meeting with Trump. They were walking around the grounds. They were seen walking all around and engaged in discussion. He's going to play a major role in the next administration. He's a pretty smart guy.
He'll have to be some sort of senior advisor role because, you know, by federal regulation, he cannot be paid because of the rules, but he can't have an official title.
Yeah, but his voice will be heard, and I think probably was heard today.
Yikes. I am fascinated by this. This is a very straight. I mean, this is not the outcome I wanted, and I don't think that's a mystery to anybody who listens to the show. Was to have Donald Trump as the president-elect, but I am now watching the drama unfold. I hope that the people who are worried, and you know, people want to dismiss it. I don't know why it bothers you. People get to have their fears, especially when they've been poked. And we have been raked over the coals for the last year, right down to the audio on the bus. I mean, I'm not saying every survivor of sexual assault responded the same way in a way that was just so mortified that this could be the leader of our country. But watching what's happening this week from Chris Christie, who, by the way, Eric, was that somebody who you liked a couple of years ago? Was he on the radar for the leader of the party?
I worked for Jeb. I was a Jeb Bush supporter.
So you got some of his money?
No.
He spent it. It went somewhere. Didn't get any delegates, but he sure spent a lot.
No, we had a Representative Cabello, who we had on earlier, was a Jeb supporter as well.
He went to D.C. and met Newt Gingrich.
Yeah, and Gingrich outbid Jeb.
I don't even know what to say to that.
Politics, man.
Newt of all people.
But we have in a little bit. We have an interview with Jane Lynch, and so I want to make sure we cover. Is there any? I know that you had a lot of things that you wanted to talk about.
I think the one thing that I'd like to say is, as badly as the Democrats missed what was going on in the country,
yes,
misunderstood the depth of the pain. And misunderstood the message that was coming from Middle America. Let's now not have the Republicans make the same mistake about folks that are scared and are fearful. We need to just come together and help understand each other. And somebody needs to bridge, and that has to be the president-elect. And like I said earlier, I don't have much confidence that he has the ability to do it because we just have never seen him do that before.
I would say I would love to be proven wrong about his ability to lead this country. I mean, the idea that you would want the country to fail because you don't like your leader is unfortunate. I would rather be surprised by him.
I think I can speak for everybody in this room. I think we all hope that Donald Trump becomes the most successful president in the history of the United States, because then the country would be doing great.
Yeah. I would love for everything that we ever wanted. Elliot, hey, let's live there for a minute, Elliot. I mean...
Yeah, I can't.
Suspend disbelief for just a minute. Pretend you're going to a movie. Mm-hmm.
I believe in Superman. I cannot believe in Superman.
Wait a minute. Elliot, the Cubs won the World Series.
Anything's possible.
Anything. Yes. In fact, I'm upset. It's been 2 weeks since we've had baseball.
You know what it is to me, and I'll say this is as far as with Donald Trump himself and what he does. Yeah, you know, we do need to support him. I think where my faith needs to be restored is in the American people, because a lot of division started not just in this election, but before, for two terms, 8 years of constant obstruction of people saying Obama this, not my president, he's a secret Muslim terrorist, he founded ISIS, blah, 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 blah. And that got folks who supported Obama pretty angry. And now those folks who did that for how many years are saying, well, now you need to respect this president. So it's like, okay, this is, if we want to put this sort of thing behind us, guess what? We both sides have got to put stuff aside.
Well, you certainly can respect the institutions and respect the president and hope he does well, but that doesn't mean you throw your principles out the window.
And you
have to keep your principles, and you have to make sure that the folks in power do what they are supposed to do.
Accountability.
You got to hold them accountable. Mm-hmm. And those kids marching in the street in all those cities right now, that's what they're doing. That's not paid protesters. Mm-hmm. It's not organized anarchists.
Yeah, the idea they were paid really made me.
Amazing.
I mean, it was completely
those
spontaneous.
Real pain.
Do you remember when Trump announced and he had this crowd at Trump Tower last year?
Yeah,
they were paid $50 a pop.
Yeah,
and now
street
they're,
money.
They're
yeah.
saying
that these protesters that this are. Is phone. Eric, you wanted to say something?
But that's why Trump went to that. That's why he went there, because he did that. So he just assumes, well,
he
other people are doing
does.
It.
Yeah, oh,
exactly.
I see.
Yeah. I think that's true.
Sure.
I agree with what Elliot was just saying. I mean, I think we've got to, you know, on both sides, we've got to, you know, have some balance there. But the other thing I guess I'd say is, you know, that we hadn't talked about was one of the things that was overlooked. Excuse me. One of the things overlooked in this election cycle is the widespread dissatisfaction with the president. You know, while he's personally popular, when he's not on the ballot, like in 2010, 2014, and this cycle, Democrats get shellacked and pretty good. And so it's an interesting dynamic.
I think there's a reason for that, and that's because about 10 years ago, the Democratic Party became the party of Wall Street. It does not understand nor speak to middle America anymore. It's out of touch. And I do think President Obama understood and I think was and has been focused on middle America. The problem is, starting with the auto bailout, they failed to treat each of those major federal initiatives that came from the White House as a campaign, and would then fail to market it properly at the grassroots level to explain to middle America, this is why we're doing this, and here's how it's going to impact you. This is why you want us to do that. Instead, they let the Republicans hijack it, demagogue all that stuff to death, and people now have these impressions that are not really accurate on ACA, on the auto bailout. You can go all down the line. And it was very, very poorly done. They were brilliant at getting Obama elected, and they were terrible at marketing his major initiatives and promoting those to the folks that needed to understand them.
Yeah,
better.
The message was lost. I think the progress, anything that was accomplished, and failures. I mean, whatever it was, the failures were highlighted and the accomplishments were not. And, you know, I don't think that we got to 4.9 unemployment by accident. I think that, there were things that were accomplished over the last 8 years.
It was Republican-controlled Congress and their economic policies.
Wait, but the Republican president-elect said the real unemployment rate might be 48%.
Oh, so that would be Republican policies. Right? More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening pretty late, and I just off the air spent a couple of moments speaking to our guest and told her immediately I was going to geek out because I'm a crazy fan for her. Jane Lynch is on the line with us, and I have to tell you, there is an episode of Gilmore Girls that I just started screaming when I saw you playing the nurse dealing with Emily. So,
I'm getting, you know, they have shows coming out on Netflix.
I was going to say, you know, I thought that for sure they should bring you back for the Netflix miniseries. How are you doing?
Well, I have yet to be invited. I'm great. Thank you so much. I'm glad to be home. It's a terrific feeling.
And I know that you have a CD, a Christmas CD, which I'm thrilled about because, you know what, we need so much. I'm ready for Christmas now, Jane. I'm going to be honest with you.
Oh, man, me too.
I've never needed Christmas music so much in my life. Can you tell me a little bit about this collection of songs?
I sure can. It's 10 regular carols that we've done, just lushly arranged, if I do say so myself, by Tony Guerrero, our band leader. We have a quintet, but we've also added strings and horns, and it's a real retro album. It goes back to about like 1958, 1960, when you had those really tight harmonies. And Kate Flannery, who was Meredith the Drunk on The Office and a good friend of mine, and this guy, Tim Davis, the three of us do very tight harmonies with this beautiful quintet, jazz quintet behind us, and there's 5 original songs as well. And it's definitely something I think that is needed. I'm so glad I'm doing this right now. It's making me so happy. They're playing the song at radio, and I hope you guys will too. It's just great. It's good to be happy about something. It's been a tough week, politically for those of us who voted the other way. And it's kind of shocking and stunning. So it's kind of nice just to sit back and think some carols.
It must be, because I know that right before the election you had gotten together with the Funny or Die folks and did a video, you know, really kind of trying to drive that last week home of how important it is to vote.
Yeah, a lot of people did vote, you know, and more people who voted voted. It was like record turnout. You know, a lot of people participated in this election, which is a great thing.
Well, and that's, you know, a lot of people have been telling me, look, we've won some ground when it comes to female representation in other places, including California, right here in Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that
Kamala
is
Harris, yeah.
Yes, and there's right here in Tammy Duckworth has won, and you know,
right,
and
right.
For people who get annoyed with us for feeling disappointed. It's funny. Have you noticed any of that at all, or are you kind of around people that
yes.
are as supportive
well,
as
I'm
you
not,
are?
No. Well, of course, everything I have to say and think is preaching to the choir. Everybody around me thinks the same, of course. But, you know, the minute this was decided, I unplugged my cable box and I declared my entry on Safari, so 538 wouldn't be right there for me to click on, because I'm so mad at them right now.
I know.
And just kind of gone on a media fast. I gazed at the Tribune today, and I'm just going to let it all go and hope for the best and, support him because he is now our guy. But, you know, and not stand for it if there's an attempt to go backwards in time in terms of rights. You know, that will not be stood for.
I think that's going to be the difference. A lot of people were concerned, whether this is like World War II or before that. I think that because there are so many people who will bear witness, who will not let it stand. And again, I
love how you say that. Yeah, mm-hmm.
That is the truth. And again, with people like you, you know, we have to look around and see who are the people that influence us. And I'm so grateful, as I told you off the air, for the body of work that you have. People just loved your character on Glee, loved living in that sort of, you know, everyone has that sort of rage. that your character, you know, just want to be, and I think that's part of it. You know, people, I think what drew people to that character is, you know, saying whatever you wanted. Unfortunately, they also went to a candidate who says whatever he wants. And that's, it's a strange place to live. And I know you have, you received a Lifetime Achievement Award last night with the Chicago Film Festival and a Comedy Festival. Congratulations on that.
Yeah. Thanks so much. That was a joy. Just a great honor and joy to be with those folks.
And I am on the website for your CD that has come out. And people can order this now, or is it pre-order?
No, you can order it now. It's on iTunes. The link is active, and it's ready to go. And we're going to be on HSN Monday night performing live, selling the actual CD. So you can get it on iTunes right now, download it, and sing with it. And or watch us on HSN Monday night.
And this is, again, this is her new album. Jane Lynch has a new Christmas album called Swingin' Little Christmas, also featuring Kate Flannery and Tim Davis with a Tony Guerrero quintet. Mm-hmm. This had to be so much fun to put together, to get into a studio.
Labor of love. Yeah, that labor of love. We did it all ourselves. We paid for it. We marketed it. We created our own label. We're surrounded by, like, the most talented people who donated their services. And it's just, it's total labor of love, and I'm very proud to be running all over town this morning talking about it.
And how's the tour sort of schedule look like for you? Now you're in Chicago. This is the release date for your album. And then the CDs come out on the 14th. What's next?
Yeah, well, we're going to do three shows in San Francisco. That'll be basically the songs from the album. And then we'll do one in L.A. on the 21st of December. And that's it. That's all we've got going on. We've got a gig with our original cabaret show in January in Aspen, but that's basically it. We're kind of retiring that show, and we're going to probably either come up with a new one or something else. We'll see.
And because you are a stage performer as well as a film actress and television star, what is there? I mean, obviously, this week is a little bit different when you are, you know, even in the situation of receiving an award at Second City. Do you think the next few weeks, the way you create something next, do you feel like it's going to be well, I'm going to go ahead and guess it's going to be informed by the way things have shook out this week?
Well, I don't know that I'd like to hit the nail on the head that much with anything I do, but, you know, when you dig deep within yourself, you're always going to come up with the stuff that, you know, that you care about. So I doubt that I'll be, like, doing a political satire anytime soon. But, you know, I think the greatest, one of the things is that I think one of the greatest gifts we have as human beings is, and not everybody has this, and I'm speaking of a president-elect, but this ability to look at ourselves and to laugh at situations that feel really dark, and to find something funny in them and the ridiculousness of human nature sometimes. And, you know, I think that needs to be front and center.
And that is, I think, going forward, when I mentioned being bearing witness, I think that we keep showing mm-hmm. up, too, is the other key thing. To keep showing up and keep doing the work.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. And you know, we have a society that is of many colors, and of many persuasions, and of many religious devotions, and we're not going to go back.
No.
It just won't happen.
No.
Globalization is not going to stop because of this. It's the natural evolution of life reaching ever forward towards equality and more innovation. And this whole thing of let's put the brakes on it, which is, I think, the basis for a lot of this, put the brakes on it, go back to the way we were. And, it just never happens that way. I was telling someone yesterday that I think it's almost as if we're, like, taking a step backward. You know how you have to take a step backward in order to, like, go boom, forward?
To sprint, sure.
One step back and, into a sprint. So we'll see. We'll see what happens in the midterms.
and as you mentioned, I feel the same way sometimes amongst my friends that I'm preaching to the choir. I have the distinct pleasure of working for WGN Radio and hosting the show.
Yeah.
And we reach, in the middle of the night, we reach 38 states in Canada. So I'm working toward, you know, it's listening to each other, I think, is going to be the most important thing as well.
Yes, yes. And staying positive. And, you know, it's like Michelle Obama said, when they go low, we go high. You know, we don't give into it. And the way we can, like, blow off steam is find something funny about it. Oh, I just swore on radio.
That's the beauty.
I apologize.
No. You don't have to apologize at all. I mean, that's the thing is that I'm glad that you felt comfortable enough to do that for me. I don't mind at all.
And Michelle Obama would have never said that.
Not at all. Before we let you go, because I know you're on a tight schedule, I did not realize that you were born in Illinois.
Yeah, I'm from Dalton, which is on the south side. And, you know, my family is all still here living in the city, and, you know, we're a couple of generations Chicagoans.
Well, that is great to know, and I hope that next time you come through, I would love to have you live on our show. I'm on from 11 p.m. to 2 a.m., so if you're up for staying up late next time you're in town, I'd love to have you in and meet you in person.
That would be great.
Again, we've been talking.
I would love that.
Oh, I love hearing that. And you can catch her coming up. You can see her on Monday night on HSN. She'll be performing live from her new CD along with Kate Flannery and Tim Davis and then the Tony Guerrero Quintet. Mm-hmm. The CD is A Swingin' mm-hmm. Little Christmas, and you can go to KitchOneRecords.com as well as find it on iTunes and Amazon.com. Jane, have a great afternoon, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Well, Thank you, Patty. I so appreciate it.
Thank you. You too. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. I was going to go in one direction, but Ken Jakubowski says he has an uplifting story. What's your uplifting story? Because I would like that.
It's not uplifting in that type of way.
Now I'm going to be disappointed.
Unfortunately. But okay. I think the message, the overriding message from everything that the country has been through for the last 18 months and that we're about to continue to go through as we ride out the Trump formative days of the Trump, soon-to-be Trump administration. People need to get involved. You know, don't leave it to Washington. Don't leave it to Springfield.
Don't leave it to Cook County. No.
You have the power. Don't let them usurp it on both sides. This is for Republicans and for Democrats. Go to your local school board meetings. Make your voice heard. Go to local city council. Just go. Get involved. Let them know what you're thinking. Go to when your local congressman comes and does town hall meetings and your U.S. senator happens to fly through. Go to those meetings. Don't be invisible and make sure you vote. But don't just be a citizen once every 2 years and then every 4 years on election day. Be engaged. Be involved. Don't let these guys take what you control and use it for their own purposes. Take back your country.
That's right. I mean, that's why people wanted to change the government. They wanted something. They wanted to throw out the old guard, the institution. Well, you can be a part of that and know what's going on. See what does that mean?
You have
what's happening.
People don't understand. We have the power.
Yeah, people.
We have
government.
The power. It's up to us. We put them in office, either by our action or inaction. And it's
government is not some separate thing, far and off, and apart from us, or at least it shouldn't be. And it's not that hard to go out and make friends and meet people who are in these jobs and even become one.
Okay, let me just real quick to offer, since you guys are very experienced at this, and address the counter argument, which is, one, your vote doesn't count because the politicians who are there do things like gerrymandering districts to make sure that the votes always go their way, or you have voter suppression laws that keep folks from voting. I agree with you. I think voting counts. You need to be engaged. And if an engaged electorate can't be turned away. But there are plenty say my vote doesn't count because politicians do their best to keep it from counting. What do you say to that?
I think in engaged citizenry, it is much more difficult to engage to implement those sorts of strategies when the citizenry is engaged and fully paying attention and active. There's nothing that scares an elected official more than having a town hall meeting and having it packed. Makes him very nervous, or him or her very nervous.
You got to turn the heat up, make it really hot and uncomfortable then.
Make it hot and uncomfortable. If you're not happy with things, you don't take it over.
And even if there are obstacles, that is more reason to jump in. If somebody ever tried to stop me from voting, I would not let it happen. I would spend the time and do whatever I needed to do to protect my own rights. And I know that by doing that, I'm protecting other people's rights as well.
That sounded loud. Did you hear that?
Yeah, I heard that too. There's a nice loud boom cascading at 1:30 in the morning through downtown Chicago.
But to your point about, we've got, you can same day register and vote. I mean, they've almost made it so easy now to show up at your polling place and vote. There's, no reason that you should say, I can't. And to the idea that my vote doesn't count, I think it's a kind of a lame argument. I think that you prove the point by not voting.
Yeah. And if you're wondering, every time someone calls, I often ask, who's your representative? Who's your senator? And I would say 95% of the time, people don't know. And so there's a website called openstate.org. You type in your address, and it gives you your representative and your state senator. And this is something we often have to explain, too. Your state representative and your state senator are different from, let's say, we just elected Tammy Duckworth. I mean, so that you have, there are these different layers. So try to find out what that different component, what does it mean to you on a local level, on a state level, on a federal level? Those are all different things that we have to be aware of.
I mean, look, the power of the people, it's not a joke. I mean, it is real. And what happens is when folks sleep on their sit on their hands and they stay out, they disengage, that's when stuff happens that we later look at and go, hey, I'm not happy. Well, okay, there's a reason why they were able to do it. Nobody was paying attention. Pay attention. Get involved. It's fun.
It is.
If you're single, it's a great way to meet people. If you're elderly, it's a great way to build friends.
If you're single, come to Springfield with me, Elliot, next week and hang out. There are a lot. I mean, it's okay. Eric might not agree, but
down there.
Oh man.
And you don't need to. Eric, yep. Last point I want to make, and sorry for no. Gerrymandering this thing or filibustering this thing. It's not. You don't need special skills. Some people are intimidated by it. You don't need any special skills. You are fully qualified simply by walking in the door and sitting down at a meeting. Your voice is equal to everyone else's. You don't need anything special, any special knowledge. Just be there.
And if
get
you
involved.
Need some motivation, think about who might be taking your spot.
Mm.
Right? People you fundamentally disagree with, people who may be off the wall, and they're the ones who are sitting there and you're not.
It tends to be those folks who show up, too.
Yes.
Kind of
it does.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Eric?
So you were saying Open State?
OpenStates.org.
So along those lines, you can also go to Open Secrets, and you can look and see who's supporting your elected official and where they're getting their money from.
.com or .org?
I think it's .org.
Okay.
But,
and find out where the money's coming from?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Isn't that what WikiLeaks is for? Doesn't WikiLeaks tell us everything you need to know?
Those are just emails. Those are just Hillary's emails.
Yeah. You're going to get me angry at 5 minutes to two because I've been reading a lot of it, and I've come to the conclusion that it is not just rhetoric that my candidate Bernie Sanders did lose because it was rigged, and not just the primary process, but dating back. A year before.
Oh, you mean the DNC.
When
DNC.
This was, yes, indeed, when this was all grease for Hillary. Bernie would be president today. I'm absolutely convinced of that. But that's a whole nother matter.
I do love that.
No, he'd be president. People say, well, how would they elect a socialist? They just elected a demagogic, racist, misogynist buffoon who has serious focus and temperament issues and who surrounded himself with a bunch of nut jobs.
And a lot of people who voted for Trump said that they would have voted for Bernie over Hillary. So, I mean, I think there's a lot to that. And I do love that Donna Brazile was having this, you know, sort of a debriefing yesterday, a big meeting, and one of the staffers got up and was like, it's your fault. It is if you know you guys hadn't done exactly what you just said,
circular
manipulate things.
Squad.
Yeah,
you know Bernie's coming to town next week.
He's
speaking somewhere next Friday.
Oh,
is he going to pick up a guitar and do some tunes? Like Simon and Garfunkel.
Look, Wednesday morning, Thursday morning, Friday morning. The sun's still coming up in the east. We're going to be okay.
It is.
That's kind of a low bar, though, don't you think?
Hey, it is.
We didn't get nuked?
Is that what you're saying?
We didn't.
It is a pretty low bar. And, hey, for those who think that their vote doesn't count, tell a very short story. I don't think I've told this on the air before. Back when I was in college, I worked on a race for a water commissioner in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And, you know, in those days, you had your lists of voters and you were responsible for particular areas and you would call people a couple times during the day to make checklists to find out if they had voted. We knew it was a close race and it was 7:45. Polls closed at 8:00. And there was one guy that I knew was a supporter of my candidate and he hadn't voted yet. So I called him up. He comes to the phone. He's panting. So I said, what are you doing? He said, well, I'm cutting the grass. I'm trying to get it before the sun goes down. I said, well, look, you are right across from the polling place. It's a very close race. Could you please just go vote? Okay, fine. He went and he voted. I checked. He actually voted. We won that race by one vote.
No.
True story. So every vote really does count. It really does count.
Every year there's a local race somewhere in the United States.
Something like that happens. That was like the coolest thing. When I found that out, I'm like, wow, man.
Okay, before we go, actually, this is the last thing. Okay, so 110 million people did not vote.
Yeah.
But there were lines for days for early voting and on the day of voting. If 110 more million people showed up, how is that going to work?
We'd still be counting. There'd still be polling places open.
But I mean, do you think that we saw, you know, footage on television and we talked about it on the radio how long the lines were. Did that also drive people away? Was there understaffing to make it seem unmanageable?
I think on the early vote, they don't have as many people managing those polling places.
Yeah. Was that correct?
443,000 people in Wisconsin were turned away the day of the polls because of inaccuracies in their registration. 443,000 people wanted to vote, and they could not vote in Wisconsin.
Matt Babala, you can come in here. Matt, if you want to come and do a crosstalk, come meet these guys. Matt's the host taking over the next show. There's so many elements to this that I know that there are some people who are burned out on this. I also know there are other people who are, they want to keep talking about it. And I'm starting a lunch. We're going to start, getting folks together and talking. Matt Babala, come and let us know what's coming up on your show. Is there anything about the election that you want to talk about?
Did something happen?
It's been a while since we've talked.
It feels like it was 20 years ago, doesn't it?
It does feel like a long time ago.
Hey, you know what else, though? The Cubs won the World Series.
They did.
Yes.
They did.
What's coming up on your show?
Well, we're going to talk about the election quite a bit. We're talking with a lot of the guests that we talked to on the lead up for the last few months. Professor Jeff McCall of Media Studies over at DePaul University. We'll talk about the media coverage of the election. We'll talk to Dr. Jen Mann from VH1 about, couples and dealing with this, which we've talked about a few different times. And a representative from Numbers USA, which is a large grassroots immigration group, about how they feel about this and what they think should happen next and what they would like to see happen as far as immigration reform.